Welcome to The Late Disciple, a ministry of Truth Seekers Fellowship. This has been a great week of lessons as Tom Murray has taught us about the Messiah that the Old Testament taught about. Join us now as Tom continues the series.
Well, welcome back to our broadcast in The Late Disciple, and we're looking at wrapping up this Genesis chapter 6, verses 1 to 4. And last time I turned your attention to what Peter had to say about these fallen angelic beings who intermarried with the daughters of men and brought about the flood in the days of Noah. Peter says in 2 Peter chapter 2, verses 4 to 5, that if God did not spare angels when they sinned, but cast them into hell and committed them to the pits of darkness, reserved there for judgment, and did not spare the ancient world, but preserved Noah, a preacher of righteousness, with seven others, when he brought a flood upon the world of the ungodly. Now, verse 4 of 2 Peter 2 gives the location of the permanently confined demons who participated in the Genesis 6 intermarriage. The temporarily confined demons are always found in the abyss, but the permanently confined demons are elsewhere. The Greek word where it says that he has cast them into hell, the Greek word that is translated in verse 4 as hell is actually the Greek word Tartarus. And Tartarus is a section of Sheol or Hades where the permanently confined fallen angels or demons are actually located. Both the abyss and Tartarus are sections of Sheol, or what the Greek calls Hades. The abyss is reserved for demons that are temporarily confined, but Tartarus is for demons who are permanently confined until they're placed in the lake of fire. Tartarus is also referred to as the pits of darkness, and these angels that participated in the Genesis 6:4 or 6:1-4 debacle, these particular angels are reserved in Tartarus, or the pits of darkness, to remain there until the judgment, Peter says. And that judgment will be at the time of the great white throne and the final judgment, when all mankind who has rejected God's grace and salvation, along with Satan, the beast, and the false prophet, the Antichrist, and also all of the fallen angelic beings, are going to be placed in the lake of fire, and they will never ever be released again. Verse 5 reveals the timing when these particular permanently confined angelic demons or fallen angels were confined. It was in conjunction with the flood, because the verse agrees with the events of Genesis 6:1-4 when it brings Noah into the picture as a preacher of righteousness. So the purpose of the flood was to destroy this product, this offspring of this unholy intermarriage between fallen angels and human women. So if we compare what Peter understood happened in Genesis 6:1-4 with what we've already been studying in Genesis, it becomes completely biblically clear that Genesis is not speaking about Sethites intermarrying with Cainites, but Peter is talking about angels who intermarried with human women. So the conclusion we have to reach is that even as late as the New Testament, Peter understood that these were fallen angels, and as a result of their sinfulness, they were confined to the pits of darkness or to Tartarus until they will be placed in the lake of fire. Not only Peter, but the writer Jude in the New Testament in verses 6 and 7 has this to say: and the angels who did not keep their own domain, but abandoned their proper abode, he, that is God, has kept in eternal bonds under darkness for the judgment of the great day. Just as Sodom and Gomorrah and the cities around them, since they in the same way as these indulged, these angels, indulged in gross immorality and went after strange flesh like the Sodomites and the Gomorrites did, they are exhibited as an example in undergoing the punishment of eternal fire. So what verse 6 tells us in Jude's account is that the fall of a select group of angels did happen, and he described their fall in four statements. First of all, Jude said, they kept not their own principality. Now, the word principality is frequently used of the angelic realm and is one of the various ranks within the angelic realm. It means that they did not remain in their position and in their place of rank within the satanic cosmos. They left that. Secondly, we're told they left their proper habitation. That is, they left the demonic angelic sphere of operation and they entered into the human sphere by taking on the form of young men and intermarrying with human women. The third thing Jude tells us is that these fallen angels are now kept in everlasting bonds under darkness. Now Jude mentioned the same thing in this passage that Peter mentioned in 2 Peter 2, that these angels are now permanently confined. Peter also revealed the place of their confinement. Peter called it Tartarus. And the fourth thing is that they are to be kept there until the judgment of that great day. So again, even Jude affirms Peter's statement that these fallen angels who participated in the Genesis 6, 1-4 sin of intermarrying with mortals to pollute the seed line of the woman so that Genesis 3:15 could not happen, that they are going to be confined and they will be kept there until the judgment of the great day, and that is the great white throne judgment, when they will then be eternally placed in the eternal lake of fire. Once again, Jude affirms that these demons will never ever be free to roam around on the earth. They are permanently confined in what Jude refers to as everlasting bonds under darkness. So it refers to a very specific unit, not of humans like Sethites and Cainites, but of fallen angelic beings. And when the time comes, these fallen special group of angelic rebels are going to be taken out of Tartarus, and they will stand before Christ at the great white throne because they tried to prevent him from ever being born by polluting the seed of the woman, and he will see that they are cast into the lake of fire, which will be their permanent abode. Now, verse 7 deals with the nature of the sin of these fallen angels, and the key phrase that is in verse 7 is the phrase, in like manner. That is, in like manner as Sodom and Gomorrah, they too, these fallen angels, went after strange flesh. Now, in the case of Sodom and Gomorrah, the sin that was committed there was strange flesh in the sense of homosexuality, male with male and female with female. But the sin that these angels committed that was similar to Sodom and Gomorrah, or going after strange flesh, means sexual union that is unnatural and unordained of God. It goes contrary to nature, and angels go contrary to nature to co-inhabit with humans. So in the case of Sodom and Gomorrah, the strange flesh was homosexuality, but in the case of these angels in Genesis 6, 1-4, it has to do with strange flesh or female human flesh. Instead of remaining in their usual natural state of residence, they invaded a new state of residence, that is, one of alien human flesh. And in that alien human flesh, they committed gross sexual immorality before God. So Sodom and Gomorrah and these angels have one thing in common. They are both guilty of sexual sins. Sodom and Gomorrah is guilty of the unnatural use in homosexuality, but in the case of these fallen angels, it was intermarrying into the human sphere of human operation. So by comparing the Genesis passage in Genesis 6 verses 1 to 4 with what Peter has to say in 2 Peter 2 and what Jude has to say in his few verses, it becomes very clear that these beings and these sons of God in Genesis 6, 1 to 4, who intermarried with human women, were actually fallen angelic beings and not simply Sethites who intermarried with the Cainites. Now, I don't have time in the rest of this broadcast to go into our next proof about what kind of Messiah did the Old Testament actually reveal in this broadcast, so I think we'll take the next minute or so just to remind you that our purpose here is to help you clearly see what God did reveal in the Old Testament about the Messiah and how those closest to what God said as he progressively revealed what was going to be characteristic of this messianic Redeemer and how they understood it. We've seen that Eve clearly said, "I have gotten a man, Jehovah." So she clearly understood the God-man concept. We found later in Genesis 4:1 when she named Cain, she actually made that statement. But when she named her second son, Abel, she actually called him vanity because she realized she had not been wrong about the God-man Redeemer, but she had been wrong about Cain being that actual one. So she was off in her timing and her application. Then we saw Lamech, who thought that his son Noah was actually going to be the one who would bring that comfort. But while Lamech was right in his theology, he looked for a God-man comforter. It was not going to be Noah. It was going to be a descendant of Noah through one of his three sons, Shem, who would also be the one who would produce Abraham, who would then produce the 12 tribes of Israel, and through those tribes, the Messiah, actually the Lord Jesus himself, would actually come in the process of time. I hope this study is helping you, and I hope you'll come back in our next broadcast. And in the meantime, visit us at our website, which is www.milktomeat.org.
Thanks, Tom. And friend, we want to thank you for joining us today and hope that this series will give you a better understanding of what the Old Testament says about the Messiah and help you share Christ with your friends. I'd like to remind you to visit our new website at www.milktomeat.org. While there, you can sign up for a free newsletter, hear the radio programs, and correspond with us through email. Again, the address is www.milktomeat.org. If you have any questions or want to order a tape of the program, call us at Truth Seekers Fellowship. The number is 901-685-3385. Outside Memphis, call toll-free 866-685-3385. And we'll see you next time right here for The Lay Disciple.